you for calling 211, your number to find or give help in Middle Tennessee. To speak immediately with someone in English, press 1. Para español, marque el 2. If you are calling from a rotary phone, please hang up and dial 615-279-1419. All calls are confidential. Your call may be recorded for quality assurance.
One moment, please. The operator is not available.
All calls are confidential. Your call may be recorded for quality assurance.
Exiting the system. Goodbye.
And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Wednesday evening, joined tonight by Kyle.
Hi, I'm Kyle.
And on Skype land, we have Rob T. Firefly.
Hi, I'm not Kyle.
We have Gila.
I am also not Kyle.
And also, somewhere very far away, we have Alex.
You do indeed. Good evening from London, from Chelsea, London. How is everybody?
Well, that's a loaded question. How do we even begin? We don't have enough time in this hour. What I'd like to do is start off by hearing from our listeners. We're not taking phone calls this week. You had your chance last week, and you'll have your chance again at 8 o'clock on Overtime over on YouTube. There are always letters. OTH at 2600.com is our email address. You can just start writing those letters right now. We read them all. We don't read them all on the air, but we do read them all. So whatever you have to say to us, feel free. OTH at 2600.com. And that's the numbers, 2600.com. What's this one here? I recently came across your podcast. Okay, it's not really a podcast. I mean, yeah, it's on the internet, but it's a radio show. What comes on at 8 o'clock on Overtime on YouTube. That's a podcast, I guess. But we're a radio show. That's also on the internet. One of the first, by the way, we started this in 1997. Radio Chef started in 1988, but I digress. Recently came across your podcast, and I've got to say, I'm hooked. I wanted to reach out and ask if you're accepting guests on the show. It's not really an application process. You know, we find people that are interesting to talk to, and we reach out to them, and oftentimes they're quite willing to talk to us. But we're always open to suggestion. To give you a brief background, our CEO, De Niro, is a serial entrepreneur, seven-figure Amazon seller, former Google Ads agency owner, and high-ticket consultant. I don't understand what I just said. He spent 14 years behind the mic as a podcaster and interviewed over 450 guests. Can you imagine if we had to count how many guests we've had? I'd never even thought to do that. He's also an Amazon best-selling author and the founder of... how do you get to be an Amazon best-selling author? You just put material on Amazon and... Well, I don't know. Okay, this just goes on and on. We're thinking he could bring some value to your audience. You know what? This, I don't know if this even was written by a human. I don't think this is a listener. I really don't, because these are not the kind of things that we talk about generally. We don't even use this lingo. A foolproof way to hire A-plus remote assistants. What does that mean? Fill your calendar with 40-plus calls every week in the next 30 days. I don't want 40-plus calls every week. Actually, that's not that many. But I'm sorry. Sorry to waste people's time with that. We need a better screening process up in the back office there. All right, here's another letter. This is a friendly challenge from name withheld upon request. Long-time listener, unfortunately, I'm not in range of your radio tower, so I have to listen to your show online. I appreciate you doing that and not calling it a podcast. One of the times that you were trying to get donations a few shows back, you mentioned that Off the Hook was a show about hackers, electronics, and things like that. Sounds like something any one of us would say. Lately, for the past few months, it seems to have gone away from that lineup, and unfortunately, the shows are mainly about politics. So here's my friendly challenge, as alluded to in the title. For one show, please do not talk about politics at all. Don't mention the name Trump or Biden. Oh, by reading your letter, I violated your request. Wow, what do I do now? Don't mention the name Trump or Biden or any of the others. Don't talk about how the world is ending because of the new president. Please talk about what your roots are, about the hacker's life, about electronics, about new technology, things like OSINT or privacy protection or encryption. Please, for 1 week, do not talk about politics. From a loyal listener, but one that needs a break from all of the hate. A couple of things in this letter that make me think that it's not so much the politics that you object to. It's the criticism of one particular person. That we might be targeting because they happen to be the most powerful person in the world now. For 1 week, can we not talk about politics? Well, first of all due respect, I don't think we're going to be able to accommodate you this week. Certainly not this week. Number two, I don't think when we're talking about things that have to do with privacy, technology, basic human rights, the media, all kinds of things like that, I don't think you can really label that as politics. Politics are, you know, campaigns and elections and things like that. Everything else is life. You know, it's what affects us. And what is going on right now in the hallowed halls of the government, I don't think has ever been more relevant to the subject matter of Off the Hook or to hackers in general. Because what we are seeing, we're seeing some of the most powerful people on Earth who are basically taking control of how we communicate. Communications, one of the things we talk about all the time. Communications via social media, communications via the mass media, communications via what we read in newspapers and hear on the radio and hear on television. You know, it's we've talked about the media being controlled by fewer and fewer and fewer people. But now what we see is this alliance that is basically constructed primarily out of fear. Fear of this new administration. And the fear is coming from some of the richest people on Earth. And you're seeing this alliance that should scare the crap out of all of us because of the power that it could potentially hold. And what we saw on Monday, I don't even know how to begin. Just basically seeing people bow down and kiss the ring and pledge allegiance. And the rest of us are just kind of left standing in shock, wondering what's going to happen next. How bad can this possibly get? It's been It's been something. It's been something to see. This is history. And people turn to radio shows like ours and radio stations like ours for comfort and for a different perspective and to have their voices heard. And, of course, we listen to voices from all different perspectives, some of which disagree, some of which agree, some of which have totally different ideas. But we're not going to be intimidated or shamed into avoiding something, into avoiding the elephant in the room, into avoiding the potential threat ahead, and our obligations, our duties, as true freedom of speech loving people that don't pervert that phrase, that have gone to prison for standing up for freedom of speech. Many in our community have suffered greatly for that. So we know a thing or two about it. We know a thing or two about saying things that are inconvenient to the powerful and revealing things and not shying away from controversy. So thanks for the letter, but can't really help at this point. Kyle?
Well, I'll be brief in that for us, I think the ongoing challenge, or at least me personally, is not to, admonish or correct listeners that say things like this. You may be weary of those things, but I think you need to listen to us more. I would say, go listen to something that is as granular as what you're suggesting. But the way we see it, on our show, is that this concept of consolidation and power being concentrated, I mean, the government itself being bought, more or less, that struggle between classes, yeah, I said struggle, it's WBAI, I get one per hour. So, this is class warfare. The rich have bought the media, the government, and are using as much technology as they can afford to wield their power and their desires for the rest of society. You may not like that, you may not believe it, but it is happening. Class disparities, the vast distance between the very wealthy and powerful and the rest of us is just getting bigger. And the means to basically keep us at bay have a lot to do with technology. And the act of hacking itself in its roots, yes, your word, roots, has been inherently political in many ways. Without getting really into all the different ways I feel this comment is played out, cliched, and wrong, it's just that you need to listen to more of what is being said. And also, hey, we're open to the suggestions. I mean, if you want to talk about any of that, write us a letter. Call in. We can diverge and talk about something that specific with those blinders on or whatever tunnel vision you want to trip out with. But we're recognizing the interconnectedness of all of it. We are an incredibly networked society, and yet we're not really galvanizing. We're actually differentiating. And I think that some of that is needs work. And in talking about the implications of the things that we call free services or whatever thing, yeah, it may seem boring. It may seem like it isn't hacking. But you have to understand, the government is itself a system. A lot of these corporations run systems all throughout your life, in, out, up, and around your life. Your life is run by the systems that these entities employ. So for you to, castigate, tell us that we're wrong for laying out some of the implications that it has, I think is foolish. I'm sorry. I mean, that's my challenge. I'm going to be as understanding and calm about this as I can muster, and that's my challenge on an ongoing basis, but I find this insulting.
Go ahead, Rob.
I see where this listener is coming from, and this person has written to us a couple of times over the years with much the same sentiments, but I can only speak personally for myself as a hacker. My sense of the world is filtered through who I am as a hacker, and my hacker mindset is a big part of how I see how things are and what things are. And if I'm looking something in front of me, whether it's a piece of technology or whether it's the participatory governmental system in which we find ourselves, I want to look at something in front of me and think about how can this be improved? How can this be made better? How can this be made less bad? And as a hacker, that is what inspires me to become politically active. I didn't become an activist because, you know, of anything so much as how my view of the world and as a hacker kind of sees how things are and how they can be improved. And I think being part of that and being a responsible hacker is using the tools available to you to improve what's around you, whether that's your computer, whether that's a tool, whether that's the world.
Rob, were you able to look at the world this week through your TV or whatever and see a means of making that better?
I think even when we don't immediately see the means of making that better, I think it has to be a source of the hope that we can make it better and an openness to the possibility of this being, this being something that we can look forward to improving in some way, whether it's within or without the sort of guidelines that that are put in front of us.
Go ahead, Gila.
So I don't think it's a secret that I am probably less technologically savvy than a lot of people, certainly than a lot of folks on the panel, but I am really familiar with this amazing piece of technology I interact with every single day. And that's my eyeballs, and they are working fine. And part of what is scaring me to little tiny bits and pieces right now are the number of people who are falling over themselves backwards to tell me that I didn't actually see what I saw.
I'm so happy to hear someone else say that, because there are so few people that are saying that. I assume you're referring to Elon Musk's display.
I very much am. And the idea that that's not what happened, like, I am an awkward person. I'm an awkward person and a bad dancer.
No. Give yourself some
credit. But I've accidentally moonwalked. Like, it's weird things happen. But you know what I've never accidentally done? Ever? I've never even accidentally, like, I can't even do that when I'm hailing a taxi. Like, I just, my arms don't do that. And the idea that 48 hours later, no one's going to come forward and say, actually, that wasn't what happened.
Yeah, it was a full-on Nazi salute. No question about that. There is just no way you make that series of motions accidentally. And people are saying, oh, he's autistic. Give him a break. As if that has anything to do with it. You know, I think amongst us, we know hundreds, if not more, autistic people, and I don't think we can point to a single one that ever did that because they're autistic or anything of that nature. It's grossly disgusting, and you know, it brings to mind, you know, the white supremacist symbol that people make with their hands. You know, it's like the OK symbol or whatever. And you know, if you confront them on this, even though there's 10 of them posing in a picture and all making the same sign, kind of hidden, you know, they'll say, oh, we're just making the OK symbol. And you know damn well they're not. You know that it means something else. With Elon Musk's case, this is a guy that is currently pushing for a far-right party in Germany to take over, a Nazi-espousing organization in Germany. and we're supposed to think this is all some big coincidence. Now, and if you look at his statement in regard to this, it doesn't say anything about, no, that's not what this was, or, oh, my God, that's not what I meant at all. No, it was an attack on the people who would dare say that about him. But no denial whatsoever. Now, Is he simply trolling, saying, "Oh, you know, stop hitting yourself. You know, we're basically this. You can't prove that that's what I meant, but I'm going to do it again anyway." Or whether or not he actually meant it at the time, we can't say because we can't get inside his head. I'm disgusted with the way the media has handled this, the way the mass media has handled this. Listen to what CNN said moments afterwards. And this is one of the few networks that actually addressed it. They said that was an odd-looking salute and, quote, evocative of things we have seen in history. Evocative of things we have seen in history. They never said the N-word, the Nazi word. They never said that. And the late-night talk shows, same thing. You know, if they make reference to it at all, they don't use that word. They're afraid of Elon Musk. And, you know, here at WBAI, we ain't afraid of Elon Musk. We're not afraid of Trump. We're not afraid of any of these people. And we will speak our minds. You can disagree with us. No law against that, for sure. But absolutely, absolutely, we will call things as we see them. And wow, that was something to see. And there was a lot to see on that day. You know, just looking at the New York Times right now, I'm live scrolling through their front page. I'm just going to read you some of the headlines that are on the front page. Federal workers told to inform on colleagues trying to dodge DEI crackdown. All right. Right underneath that, the bishop who pleaded with Trump. Was anyone going to say anything? Right underneath that, far-right leaders granted clemency by Trump expressed desire for retribution. Right underneath that, Trump seeks to paralyze independent privacy and civil liberties watchdog. Right next to that, Congress clears measure to deport immigrants accused of crimes. That's probably the least controversial, believe it or not. It goes on. That's only the first five stories, but wow. It's, you know, it's like, imagine we were doing a radio show and everything was burning around us. And there are people saying, can you not talk about the fire? Can you just not bring that up? It's so unpleasant to hear. Well, we're sorry. We're sorry that everything is on fire. We're sorry that we're seeing our civilization here collapse in front of us. We're sorry to say that we warned you this was going to happen. We're sorry that not enough people heeded those warnings, not just from us, obviously, but from so many people. And now we're sorry for what we're going to be witnessing. But just like every hacker who has gone to prison, we're going to be sharing our experience, and we're going to do it through hacker eyes in ways that others cannot. And we hope we have your support and your help with that. All right, Alex, I realize you haven't spoken up yet. I assume you have something to say.
Yeah, I mean, I've always got something to say, right?
I figured.
Yeah, I mean, it's late here. It's so happy Thursday from London, but to go back to the original point, which was that the caller was criticizing us about talking politics too much, I think I agree with him. I think we do talk politics a bit too much. I think it's divisive in many ways, but I also tend to agree with Kyle because I think the solution here is to listen more. I think the more that you listen to the show, you'll actually find that the signal-to-noise ratio with respect to politics is probably better here as opposed to anywhere else. But look, we're airing and we're weighing strong opinions on things. That's what terrestrial radio has always been about. That's what it's supposed to be about and what it's going to continue to be about. And I'm happy to duke it out with you guys every week on these subjects. I think that's what the First Amendment is here for. So, look, I wish we didn't have to talk politics. If we didn't have to talk politics, we wouldn't. But we don't pull punches. And I think that's what's important to remember. It does not matter if it's a Republican in office or if it's a Democrat in office. If they cross us, if they cross the line, we will hit the Democrats as hard as we will hit the Republicans. Mm-hmm. That's what I promise you.
All right. Thank you very much. Sounds like you're running for office. But yes, that is what we stand for. Absolutely.
Not yet. Yeah.
I just saw this story also in the Times. Many Reddit users are boycotting a social media site known as X. We know it as Twitter. After Elon Musk twice made a Nazi salute. I'm kind of skipping over how they phrased it. Mr. Musk, the billionaire owner of this social media platform, was speaking at the celebratory rally after Trump's installment. Well, we all know what happened. We all saw it. And if you didn't see it, well, I don't know if I envy you or what. Although Mr. Musk played down the criticism, speculation about the gesture's meaning broke out online, including on Reddit, where people gather in thousands of forums known as subreddits to discuss all kinds of interests. By yesterday, a proposal had emerged in dozens of Reddit groups across a wide spectrum of interest. Many users wanted to place a ban on linking to any Twitter posts as a way of boycotting the platform and Mr. Musk. A moderator of a subreddit devoted to Formula One racing said it would ban content from Twitter for a trial period. Links from Twitter are now also banned in r/New Jersey. For some reason, the moderators of that forum said in a post that was accompanied by a photo of Mr. Musk emblazoned with a red block symbol. Other place-centered forums had similar posts. 2X Chromosomes, a space centered on women's perspectives, said that a bot would automatically remove any links to Twitter. That announcement garnered thousands of approving votes. By this morning, organizers of groups with vast audiences focusing on hometowns, sporting teams, board games, and the economy were discussing or surveying the appetite of their members for a potential boycott of Twitter. Users who supported one cited several reasons, chief among them to push back against Musk after his appearance at the inauguration event. Others say they have been frustrated with Musk for some time because of his transformation of Twitter and his views on politics and other matters. You know, if only they were views on politics. Makes it sound so innocent, but this is so much more threatening than simply views. This is, I mean, he is a villain from all these, you know, science fiction films of somebody in the future that just takes over everything and is the enemy of the people.
I think this is the kind of small steps that need to occur to dismantle the amount of power that was placed in Twitter. A lot of that was sort of an after effect of what Twitter was. And as people see his prerogative and his actions for what they are, these little cuts, you know, are what it will take to basically leave him with what he deserves in Twitter, which isn't much, you know. A lot of people that agree, and bots, as he thought he was going to get rid of, but if that's all he ends up with, I think that's a just end to that platform. But it is by no means a requirement that any of the spaces that link to, as you pointed out, or otherwise use the content that was on Twitter, they're under no obligation to continue to perpetuate it, distribute it, and allow it to be further seen and basically direct traffic back to the site. If the traffic there is only bots and trolls and stuff, then, I mean, who really will care then? It won't be as powerful as it was when it was purchased. And I think that's really the strength, is that the people that matter need to leave there. They need to leave. I mean, it's good to stay there, you know, idling, as you've pointed out, to be aware of what's said. And it's good, I think, in investigative reasons and journalists and stuff who can stomach it should stay, but, you know, and not completely abandon it. But in so far as it is used as a town square, I think that there are plenty of other options at this stage, and an exodus is probably the best course, especially when you see this kind of tone-deaf leadership and ugliness.
Now, you know, for me, Twitter is good for bitching out corporations. You know, if they ever do something that upsets you, you simply tag them and complain, and within a few minutes, usually, they contact you to try to make it right. It's good for that, and that's about it. Not much else. Some people have not left there, so it's, you know, I don't want to cut off all ties to people I might not be able to contact in other ways. But as far as taking it seriously, that ship has sailed.
That is an incredible point, that corporations themselves, using it as a PR mechanism or a customer support mechanism, as well as government agencies. There are a lot of government agencies, especially in the U.S. government, that are just there. That's where they feel they need to be to reach whomever,
right,
and get information out. And that That they are suffering from the switching costs, the inability to leave, because then all of their cohorts and associates and people that are interested, concerned partners and all of that. What I don't know the lingo in those circles, but they are scared to death that they won't be able to communicate with people who are not, who are in their organization or not directly in their organization, but follow their work. Those affiliates then would vaporize unless they actually collectively, and imagine how many different agencies from a government perspective would have to marshal and organize and move in one direction in unison, so that you didn't have fragments, because then you have like distrust, like which platform do you go for what agency? It's like USDA is over here and they're over there.
Well,
and Senate's over there.
I think it's important to establish a presence. I say this for both individuals and for corporations, but I do think that we can't rely on corporations to do the right thing here, because look at what's happening with the social media corporations and how they fall into lockstep so easily, so quickly, and you'd think they'd be the ones with the biggest voice. But no, they're Facebook, they're terrified. Google, terrified. They're all lining up to bow down to Trump in D.C., and the rest of us are just left to shake our heads in amazement. So I don't really expect them to abandon Twitter like we hope they would. And that's a shame. That's a shame, because we need to be able to speak up freely and know that we have platforms we can rely upon and that we're not segregating ourselves. And that's what we're seeing. We're seeing that happen more and more. We had a letter from another listener who says, I listened to the latest Off the Hook podcast. Okay, another podcast.
It's a radio program.
It's a radio program, but I'm not going to...
Podcasting is diluting what this is. I realized a couple of years ago, I was like, people that know me know that I like, I'm on the radio. I've said that. But ultimately, there was like this like threshold where I became the podcast guy.
Yeah, because radio is 1930s.
And nothing changed. Nothing changed about my presence here. And I'm not saying it's like something I go around and brandish. I just happen to help out and show up here. It's not like resume material or something, but I realized, like, it went from this, like, unique, weird thing that, yeah, if you listen, you know, if you don't, you don't. But then it's like, you're doing that podcast thing. Now I'm, like, just another podcast guy to people that once might have said, wow, that's neat, you're on the radio. So thanks for nothing, podcasters. You've really, like, basically made me as lame as you.
Well, on that, continuing along this this vein here, there was talk, by the way, someone was doing a documentary not too long ago, and there was talk that perhaps Off the Hook was the first podcast because we started so early back in 97, simulcasting the radio show. But I think we were just edged out by somebody else. But anyway, so I listened to the latest Off the Hook podcast. I'd like to follow all of you who are on Blue Sky. I refuse to be a part of Twitter/X. I despise Mark Zuckerberg for his stances. If you all can give me your Blue Sky handles, I would appreciate it very much. Long-time listener, having started to listen way back in 1991, I think I've listened to almost every episode. Wow. That's probably more than we've done. I love the show. Keep doing what you're doing, as you've gained a very loyal follower. Yeah, hear that, listeners who want us to stop talking about relevant things? Well, some people appreciate it. Thanks for taking the time to read this. I look forward to many more years of hearing Off the Hook. Well, there might be some rough years ahead, but we'll have to see. Okay, thank you, Brent. I can say personally, you can find me on Blue Sky at Goldstein with a dot before the IN, and on Mastodon at Goldstein without the dot. That's how you find me. But I think, Rob, you have a better way of finding everybody, right?
Well, yeah, this program has a Blue Sky account. It's at Off the Hook Radio, all one word, .bsky.social. And if you would like to pull up the show's account, you can see who it's following and find some more folks involved with the show from there.
So we're all pretty much listed.
Those of us who are over there, I think maybe on this.
Yeah.
Okay.
Watashi wa stuff.
At least most of us.
Alex, I think your hand is raised, but it's off screen.
Yes, I'm the odd man out here. I'm not on Blue Sky, so maybe at some point, you know, I'll hear a valid argument that would compel me to join.
It's better. How about that?
Okay, all right. That's succinct. I'll give you that.
I am not on Blue Sky either, but I do still love my Mastodon.
Didn't you say last week you made a Blue Sky account? You're just not doing anything with it?
No, I said I was considering doing that, but I have not done so yet.
Ah, okay. So anyway, Alex, go ahead.
Oh, no, that's it. That was my piece.
That's all you had to say. Okay.
Yeah, that was it.
I just want to again point out that it's pronounced Blueski.
Oh, boy. Yeah, okay, let's just fracture as many ways as we possibly can. All right, so something else interesting development after this whole inauguration thing. Hours after Trump was sworn in as president on Monday, some Instagram and Facebook users started noticing that their accounts were suddenly following pages associated with the new president, First Lady Melania Trump, Vice President J.D. Vance. The official POTUS and White House Facebook pages are owned and controlled by the current administration, so it's possible some Facebook users were already following those accounts while Biden was in office and did not opt to unfollow them once they were transferred to the new Trump administration. But a number of users who have taken to Reddit to complain about their new unwanted follows claim they had never elected to follow those official pages before. Others noted that some of the pages they're following, like one for Vance in particular, appear to have been created in early January, while the page for Kamala Harris is now marked as archived. Reddit users also noted yesterday that when they searched for hashtags like #Democrats or #Democrats, #BernieSanders, #JoeBiden, searching for that on Instagram, they received a pop-up message saying the results have been hidden due to sensitive content, while searches for #DonaldTrump, #Republicans did not trigger a similar flag. Interesting. Yahoo News corroborated these results when searching for the same political hashtags on Instagram on Tuesday morning. As of Tuesday afternoon, the Democratic Party-related terms were no longer hidden. Facebook's communications director, Andy Stone, responded to the complaints in a post on Threads Tuesday. And for people who don't know all this, Instagram, Facebook, Threads are all owned by Meta. So that's something to consider. Andy acknowledged that there was an issue affecting people's ability to search for a number of different hashtags on Instagram, not just those on the left. Well, I guess the people on the left just complain more. That must be it. Stone also addressed complaints from those who said they were now following official Trump administration Facebook pages, explaining that the pages change when the occupant of the White House changes. However, he did not offer an explanation for those who insist they had never previously followed any of these political accounts. So, if that's happened to you, we'd like to hear about it. Write to us, oth@2600.com. We certainly would be interested in digging into that a little bit more. Here's another letter from a listener named Lob. It's kind of like your name, Rob, except with an L instead of an R. The news about Meta moderation changes got me thinking about the issue. I believe, like I assume you do, that Meta is not doing these changes out of good intentions, but there's also a part of me that thinks, why should Meta fact-check content? Why should people need to be told if something is true by the corporation, when the corporation has been doing a lot of shady and immoral acts in the past? We are all humans with brains, and it's condescending to think that Facebook users need official hand-holding when we all grew up during the Internet's Wild West era with basically zero moderation. We seem to have turned out almost okay. Ooh, I was with you up until that last sentence there. One funny outcome of this thing is that Reddit users have made fun of the changes. When Reddit has zero official fact-checking and purely relies on users and comments, there's not even the community notes type options. There seems to be an idea that we are smart enough to moderate ourselves, but those dummies in Facebook need an authority to tell them what's real. I'd appreciate it if you took a little moment to discuss this. Signed, Lob. Well, Lob, you make some good points here. Actually, you know what? Gila, you have an answer to this? Go ahead.
I have a thought, because I don't think it's a fair apples-to-apples kind of comparison. I think that when you're talking about Reddit, there's nothing that you can talk about that's just Reddit qua Reddit. because everything on Reddit is so incredibly subdivided. And we've talked about, or I've certainly talked about in the past, this idea that you can become the internet's main character on Twitter. Or you could, because it was all so incredibly broadcast. And Reddit doesn't have the same kind of idea. Now, again, I was not as much of a Wild West internet user as many of you were, so I will happily take a backseat to those discussions. But I think there was also – the internet was not as broadly in use in the Wild West frontier years as it is like now with the grandmas, you know? It wasn't as universal a thing as it is now, which is, I think, why we need some kind of – you can't – again, I just don't think you can compare Reddit and Facebook.
Kyle.
Well, I think this is sort of diluting the idea of a community and community standards, and it sort of it reminds me of younger people acting and talking about TikTok as though it is the internet. It's like a sort of lack of understanding of what the actual infrastructure itself is. And I mean, you're just because you've curated your whole world on one particular platform that has a set of standards that you just abide by without really thinking about, or maybe you do, you transgress and find out from the company that you've done something and you can't access stuff. But have a little bit wider view of what actually you're able to do as far as this, and understand that you're one app that you use, that you've curated your life on, they may have community standards for a reason. And it's to maybe not protect you per se, but there are people there that may need extra protection from standards like this because of the history and the awareness of how vast and wild said internet can be. And one other point, and this is definitely along the lines of what Gila was pointing out, I'm just going to remind everyone that Wild West heyday we like to talk about on the internet was much, much slower. Okay? The amount and the speed and the richness of content, like, you know, with 300 baud, you weren't getting violent videos or, you know, I'm not going to get into the worst of the worst on the internet, but, like, rotten was it. And even that was slow.
Oh, rotten.
So,
the memories.
Let's just pace ourselves and understand that, yeah, it was really bad back then, but it was like, you know, some text in IRC or some grainy GIFs. But, like, things have changed. And the amount, like, especially the concept of having an entire computer in your pocket with many sensors, specifically with geolocation and other things that could really, really affect you if that information was just sort of out there because, you know, someone violated a standard and started posting someone's information or doing some sort of, like, you know, ugly stuff online. And, like, I just think the implications that, like, and a particular platform needs to be like the whole of the internet with just no, like completely unbridled just a free-for-all couldn't have consequences is foolish. We need to recognize that, yeah, you know, you have many places to go on the internet, and certain places have different ideas of how to interact there.
For those of us who did grow up in the Wild West of the early internet, the idea back then with our IRC channels and Usenet news groups and rudimentary email, that this group of people could influence things in society, that would be so far-fetched as to be science fiction. And now we're looking at a world where social media decides presidential races and very much steers the ship. And I think that's where we are today. That we have done that. We have achieved this. So when I don't use Reddit, I don't use Facebook, just not enough hours in the day. But I do think there's a difference, and correct me if I'm wrong, Reddit is kind of open to anybody that wants to say whatever, and Facebook is a little bit more insular, right? It's like your friends, your family, you get to control who you're connected to. So for that reason, let's take the 2020 election. 2020 election was stolen. All right. It's a fact. The 2020 election was stolen. It's not a fact? Who's saying it's not a fact? There are fact checkers out there saying it's not a fact? Well, okay, but I heard that it was a fact. And my facts are as good as your facts. So I'm going to keep saying something that's demonstrably proven wrong over and over and over and over again. In courts, through journalism, people who have done actual, real research have concluded this. Now, when you don't have fact checkers, it never goes away. Because the next person comes along and says, well, I'm not convinced. Explain it to me. You won't explain it to me? You say you've explained it 10,000 times before, but you won't explain it to me. Why? What are you afraid of? This never ends. Now, the reason I think it does better in Reddit is because you have everybody kind of pitching in and taking about as seriously as the next person. With Facebook, though, you can kind of close off the conversation to anybody who doesn't agree with you. And so you have all these little groups of people or relatives or whatever who firmly believe something, and there's nobody there to tell them, hey, this has been proven to be wrong. Absolutely 100% wrong. And we can't even reach you to tell you this and to say, look at the facts, look at the decisions made by people that, you know, are either run courtrooms or, you know, basically people who know what they're talking about. If you never open yourself up to that, you're just going to be living in a fantasy world, and that is the danger. All of these people going around believing things that aren't true. On Monday, we saw Trump saying one falsehood after another. They were lies. And you could see it on major networks. They still have fact checkers. The guy on CNN is amazing. He just spends so much time going through one by one. It's easy to check this yourself to see that they're telling the truth, that yes, in fact, this never happened. Yes, in fact, this did happen. But when you don't even open the door to listening, that's when you have a brainwashed populace. That's when you have people elected on lies. That's when you have societies hurtling in the wrong direction. And that's when you have people being controlled like they've never been controlled before. So, yes, fact checkers are extremely important. I don't believe Meta themselves were doing the fact checking. I believe they had fact checkers that were not people controlled by Meta. I don't have the details, and that's a fact. But you do need fact checkers for things that are being spread around as truth, for things that people will believe, for things that people will act upon. Otherwise, what is the point of anything? You know, we're just basically in the wind as far as things go. Go ahead, Gila.
No, I think there is a lot to be said about the idea on Reddit of all these smaller communities. And again, corporate Reddit isn't saying, oh, we need fact checkers, but every individual community is setting their own standards for what is and is not okay. And I think that's a very interesting thing. The other thing that this all brought to mind for me, because I was reading a op-ed in the New York Times about this girl. She's like, I'm 17 and I'm addicted to Reddit. This ban is going to be the best thing ever because I'll get so much time back and I'll do my homework. Yeah. And complaining about how this is where all the trends are and this is how we know what to eat for dinner. And Kyle, I very much agree with what you're saying as this idea that the internet just came into being for this one TikTok moment. And thinking back a few months ago, right, you exist in the context of all in which you live and what came before you. Remember she said that and everyone laughed and everyone made fun of it. But it is so true. And if we cease to understand how interconnected we all are in so many ways, we cease to see everyone's humanity. And society and the world cannot advance if we cease to see everyone at every moment in its context.
I just wanted to add that not everyone was online back in the day, and those who were tended to be more anonymous than the inverse. And I think this has inverted. Now, a lot of the platforms encourage people to use their actual identity for their own accountability, right, to police people and, you know, have them, you know, have them realize that they themselves are being presented online. Google did this. Facebook is very, very much the same way. So the push to have people use their real identities, I think, has made it also a little bit more treacherous than it was back in the old days.
Here's a story that we're just getting details on from TechCrunch. concerning the Trump administration firing members of a cybersecurity review board in what's being called a horribly short-sighted decision. This happened yesterday, day after Trump's inauguration. Department of Homeland Security told members of several advisory committees that they were effectively fired. Among the communities impacted is the Cyber Safety Review Board, or CSRB. That's according to sources familiar with the board who spoke to TechCrunch, as well as reporting by other news outlets. The CSRB was made up of both private sector and government cybersecurity experts. One person familiar with the CSRB who received the letter informing them that their membership in the CSRB was being terminated, criticized the decision. Shutting down all DHS advisory boards without consideration of the impact was horribly short-sighted, the person who asked to remain anonymous told TechCrunch. Stopping the CSRB review when China has ongoing cyber attacks into our critical infrastructure is a dangerous blunder. We need to learn from Salt Typhoon and protect ourselves better. The fact this isn't a priority for Trump is telling. You can't stop what you don't understand, and the CSRB was arming us with understanding. The person was referring to the CSRB's review of the devastating recent breaches at several telecoms in the U.S., allegedly carried out by Chinese government hackers. I don't understand. I don't understand the logic behind firing people like that, other than they're saying something that's inconvenient to your regime, to your plans. But boy, it's troubling. It really is. Okay, one more letter. Hey, I was listening to your show, having had a career in hardware and software security. One thing I enjoy is that you expand the discussion to the ethical and even moral arena, which is food for thought. Last week, one of the group used a TLA, which I was not tracking with. A TLA. May I make a suggestion to help the discussion be more educational for non-techs and even for geezers who remember mag tape, floppy disks, and 1200 baud modems? Oh, yeah. When you use TLAs or FLAs, please explain what you are referring to. If you don't know what a TLA or FLA is, that is the point. Signed, Michael from Amityville. What is a TLA or FLA? I have no idea.
I didn't know this either, and shout out to the geezers, just okay. Generally.
Well, the shout out in 30 seconds, because that's all we have.
Well, TLAs are three-letter acronyms, like FBI, CIA, DOS.
What's FLA?
CPU.
Wait, four-letter.
Wait a minute, this is an acronym about acronyms?
USDA.
Oh, he's telling us that we don't know what he's talking about, so we should be more careful as far
FOIA.
As giving out acronyms. I agree completely. Many a time you guys are saying things I have no idea what you're talking about. I just smile and try to get on.
Back at you.
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
All right. Well, you know what? We are out of time, but we're going to be over on YouTube, so visit us over on Channel 2600. We will see you there. OTH at 2600.com. Back on BAI next week. Stay free, everybody. Good night.
I'm free. I'm so many times before, Messiah's pointed to the Lord.